dinner in celebration of the patent office, maybe the 50th or the 100th year or some celebration like that, and probably the people that were invited to this dinner at the, what's the name of the famous hotel in Washington, not the old Willard, the big one, the hotel in Washington, I'll think of it. And I guess people were chosen if they had 50 or 100 patents or something like that, I don't know. But anyway, both he and I had invitations, and we went down there to this celebration where the people of the patent office spoke and various other interesting activities occurred. The menu was after the manner of famous patents. For example, the cocktails were Manhattan cocktails, each one put up in a little bottle, probably holding about 4 or 5 ounces, in the form of a coiled snake, the head of which came up as the neck of the bottle, and in the bottle then was a cork with a plastic cherry in the top, as you put a cherry in a Manhattan. And on the front of the bottle, which was smooth, was a gold paper, a reduced facsimile of a patent of some time or other for snake bite remedy. Everything else was named or in the form of some famous inventions. For example, the salad was the incandescent salad, which was a half of a what do you call a fruit that the shape somewhat like a pear and it has a tremendous big stone in it, and it's very fat, very fatty. The shape of this pear-shaped fruit, cut in half, filled with slices of grapefruit, which went well with the fatty nature of the fruit, and then on the top, some Marchionne cherries. This was incandescent salad, shaped exactly the shape of a incandescent light bulb, and so on. Well, it was quite an affair that I, of course, will never forget. Well, that's so much for that.
All right, what about the Osmer plot? Something that...
I think I mentioned that while I was, shortly after I had left Kodak, and while I had this laboratory in Rochester, I became acquainted with and worked with a family in Cincinnati who were engineers of distilling equipment, the company being the Vulcan Copper and Supply Company, and building copper equipment for the chemical industry, and a man two or three years younger than I, several years younger than I, Ted Wentworth, who was the class of about 28 at MIT, and who has worked with me ever since. In the middle 40s or early 40s, in the middle 30s of the Depression years, when corn was so cheap it couldn't be sold, and was used as fuel in Nebraska to heat houses, and then was converted into alcohol to make gasohol. This was something which started in Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, the Corn Belt, out there in the middle 30s. And in the about the same time, or just a little after the prohibition was repealed, in the later in the later 30s, the need for a system of making absolute alcohol became apparent, and my friend Ted Wentworth developed, I was a consultant, but it was his development, a new system of making absolute alcohol. This was a modification of the azeotropic distillation, which I had been doing with acetic acid and which had first been used in alcohol in shortly after the turn of the century by Young, Sidney Young in Dublin. The system involved the use of pressure. It had to be done at a high pressure, and we did not know how high the pressure would be, how high the pressure should be for the optimum condition. We ultimately settled for about 150 pounds per square inch. Meanwhile, however, I tried to develop a system for exploring this maximum pressure by differential calculus, that is the ordinary use of maximum, setting the maximum equal to the slope of the maximum line of a curve equal to zero. And in order to evaluate this, I tried various systems of geometry plotting, but also of algebraic systems of and or arithmetical systems of putting columns of the variables and then the differences in order to see those that would come out zero. And in that, I found that I found, let me see, I explained that in one sentence here. The slope of, this search of mine found that at the same temperatures, the differential of the log of the vapor logarithm of the vapor pressure of any compound is a linear function of the differential of the logarithm of the pressure of any other compound, a straight line. The slope of the plotted line is the ratio of the latent heats of the two compounds, which is a constant, and all lines pass through the origin. This is a very simple method of plotting vapor pressures of any compound as straight lines. Hence, a single-term equation gives the vapor pressure temperature latent heat range reaction relation exactly. More useful, however, was the integral form. At the same temperatures, the logarithm of the vapor pressure of one substance is equal to the logarithm of the vapor pressure of any other substance times m, which is the slope, plus the integration constant. Well, this gives a simple relation, log P, the pressure, is equal to M times log P prime, which is the vapor pressure of another compound, plus C. Well, that was a very interesting relation because it put vapor pressures as a straight line function with only a single constant or two constants. In some cases, we developed it would be only a single constant. And so I said, well, no, next, however, was I found that while this was a very interesting thing, it didn't solve my problem. And in fact, it never did give me the answer to which I was looking for, that is the optimum pressure to operate this distillation period. However, I said, well, one doesn't just accidentally discover something and then tell people that you accidentally discovered this. You write out a brilliant syllogism of mathematics and physical chemistry and develop this all out from the axioms and say, what a bright boy am I. And that, of course, is just what I did. So 16 pages of a full-dress thermodynamic paper showed how simply and accurately to correlate and predict vapor pressures and latent heats of all substances. And also, in this single paper, a dozen related properties as freezing points, heats of chemical reactions, enthalpy charts, vapor-liquid compositions, etc. Well, this I presented at a meeting of the American Institute of Chemical Engineers paper in Buffalo in the spring, I believe it was, of 1940. And at the same time, I presented with Ted Wentworth a paper on the system of producing alcohol, absolute alcohol, by the process which had been his development and which I had helped a minor amount, but which I had not found the optimum pressure for to make it most economic. However, it was far more economic than the other system and is, of course, still in use in many plants in this country and abroad. Then, this thermodynamic development turned out to have so many facets that I used it as a playground for my students for years in developing many other relations that could be idealized in this same straight line function. And over a period of 20 years, 30 years, maybe 40 years, we've published some 50 papers on this thermodynamic relation and the various aspects which it may use to relate and correlate and predict many different thermodynamic functions. Other people have used it also for such things as determining the flow point of melted glass, and similar other out of the way ideas and quantities. The Japanese, I found, and was one of my Japanese friends sent me a slide rule that some Japanese company had put out to use this principle in picking off vapor pressures of any compound, and other relations have developed for at least 20 or 30 different physical properties of solids, liquids, and gases, including that of my brilliant student, Dr. Hung Sung Chen, who developed an equation of state for gases, which had only two or three constants as compared to the 8 to 20 constants in other equations of state, and which could be used rather accurately for determining or correlating gases.
How are your students supported? So you use this as a playground for your students for a long time. How are they supported?
With regard to thesis, when I came to Poly, it was the rule of every department in the school that every bachelor's had to do a thesis, a bound thesis. That continued until after the war, when we had so many students that we just couldn't possibly devote the time of the staff. We didn't have a staff that could devote the time to individual problems for everyone. But always, of course, there was the master's thesis and the doctor's thesis. And in many cases, if the man came, all of our graduate courses were in the evening. I think I've explained that. All of our graduate courses were in the evening. And if the man was therefore working in an engineering firm or in one of the big chemical offices, laboratories, engineering departments, or what, I always said, can you do a thesis that will be related to your work? I didn't say, I got a job for you to do, or this is what you're going to do. I said, would you find something you're going to spend a lot of time on it, a lot of effort, and a lot of your motivation, and if that can be in something interesting, or particularly if it is part of the problems or work of your company, you will be more interested. I don't know whether I went into this before, but anyway, that was always my philosophy. So I always gave the student that choice. Every student always said, I said, what would you like to work? Have you any choice? Are you working with a company and so forth and so forth? They did this. In one case, I remember, one of the very big chemical companies with offices in New York, one of the men was working for a doctor's degree. He had his master's degree already, and he was working, doing top-notch work, of course, because he was a top-notch person with the motivation and the capability. And he wanted to develop a process for making some organic chemical the company was interested in, and they... he had to get his approval, of course, from his boss. The boss came back, you can't have Dr. Othmer working with you. He's a smart guy and he works with many companies and so on. And how can you be telling him enough so that he can help you or know what you're doing? So the proposal that I made then was that I would be a consultant for the firm. And, of course, I've been consultant for many firms and have no trouble keeping secrecy or relations that way. I said, I'll be a consultant for your firm for $1 a year. And while you're working. And so for 2 years, while he was working his doctor's thesis, they paid me $1 as a consultant to him on his particular problem. Incidentally, we never published that. They never wanted it published. But anyway, what I was getting at, you asked me another question. In those cases where we had student fellows, or I did have a little money coming in, I had a little money coming in from Esso, now Exxon, coming in, and I doled this out rather sparingly, but if the student was going full-time, that is, he didn't have any company he was working for, I would quite often give him one of these thermodynamic problems, and so that was often the basis then of a paper. As a matter of fact, this one here in this week's citation with Dr. Thacker on correlating diffusion coefficients in liquids was one of the was one of those problems. That was not Dr. Thacker's doctor's thesis. Instead, I often used ideas or thoughts in this field of correlating as a doctor's qualifying problem or part of the doctor's qualifying problem, so that quite often the student would work this out as a doctor's qualifying problem, and then we would publish it. I'm trying to think. I think there were a couple, two of these that were actually doctor's problem. One was Hung Sung Chen, in which he developed the equation of state using these techniques, and another one. And there was, I believe, another one, too, that was actually a doctor's problem. But there were several master's problems in this.
I wanted to ask you what the patent number is on the one that's in that citation, classic.
You take this.
Oh.
Not a patent number. Is there a patent number? A reference number.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a journal.
That was published in as most of these were published in the old Industrial Engineering Chemistry. Although they were also published in Japan, in China, in Japan, and in Spain, and in Germany, and in France, all in different languages. And they totaled a very large number in industrial engineering chemistry. As a matter of fact, when the old INEC, Industrial Engineering Chemistry, closed down in about 1960 or whenever it was, 62, forget, one of my students went through the journal. I have a complete file of out here. It was started in 1906, INEC, and he went through the whole file and found that I had, with my students, 120 articles in the industrial engineering chemistry, which was by far greater than any other single name in that journal. As a matter of fact, while we're talking about old times, in 1920, going to Washington, or being in Washington and calling on the editor of Industrial Engineering Chemistry to talk, I think it was, about the publishing of my doctor's thesis with Dr. Howe, who was then the had been for many years, and from then on until 1960. Well, that was over a period of from, well, we'll say from 30 to 60, roughly 30 years, maybe a year or two more than that.
Let me, there are a couple other things that I think what I'd like to do now is
One thing I think you're going to want to, we're going to have to do is probably pick up chunks of this and put it around. I mean, do an editorial job.
No, that's no problem with that.
Yeah.
But I did want to talk about the encyclopedia.
Okay.
That is an area that I have a great deal of interest in. And, I guess I'd like to go right back to the beginning with that. And how does that originate? What was the...
Oh, during the war years, that is in the early 40s, Dr. Kirk, Raymond E. Kirk, was head of the chemistry department, and I was head of the Department of Chemical Engineering. We, of course, had our offices both on the fourth floor of the building at 85 Livingston Street. And we talked often. I think it may have been his original idea. But anyway, that there should be a encyclopedia of chemical technology to take the place in the English language, or parallel, or better, as the case might be, Ullmann's encyclopedia in German, which, of course, was already extant. We discussed this off and on and didn't get around to doing anything until somewhere came into the picture. I guess Ray brought them in. Two men, Drs. Decker and Drs. Proskauer. And these two gentlemen had together formed a middle-aged men, had together for a lifetime experience in publishing, and both of them with their doctor's degrees in science, chemistry, and at least Proskauer had written one or two books on technology and so on, of chemistry. But anyway, they were interested in their corporation, scientific, no, InterScience was the name of it, InterScience, the InterScience company, in publishing, in doing something about an encyclopedia. And with their experience in publishing, and particularly their large knowledge of the field and of the markets, and particularly of the people in the field, and particularly Ray Kirk's knowledge of people. Ray Kirk was a very social animal. He was a very easily met, friendly, sociable person that everybody loved. And he had many contacts. Ray was not an outstanding scientist, that is, he never had a large number of papers of his own, but he had a great empathy for people. And so that made him a very good person, capable person for the job of getting people together that would do the writing, because it was obviously essential that there'd be a very large tribe of authors. So we, by now it must have been 1946, in that range, and so we organized this idea of InterScience publication of the Encyclopedia of Chemical Technology by Kirk and Othmer, went about it by the InterScience hired an office right across the street, the back of a second floor front office, I believe, of some attorneys in a small building right across the street, Livingston Street. Our first meetings we had regularly once a week. One whole afternoon we devoted to general planning, and it was originally decided that what we wanted was something that would be broken down into, say, 1,000 articles. We thought we would have 1,000 articles covering, we thought that was a round number that we could live with, as trying to encompass the fields of chemical technology. And that, incidentally, was not far off of the first edition. So we went into this without any contracts, either Ray or me, and we really looked upon more as a pro-organization